From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about tiny differences, or big differences in words that seem like they're exactly the same. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey guys, let's just jump off today with a listener email. Zach, we've heard from Zach a few times before.
Yes, it's Zach from Brooklyn. He wrote in and it's a quickie. I like it. He's succinct. He said, shard or shard.
Oh, God.
Same or different. This has come up recently, and I thought I'd let you do the heavy lifting.
This is always really weird to me.
Shard and shard.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think it's a really good question. As I have noticed Ross uses shard often. You do, Ross, when you talk about.
I do.
I have never used shard. I always say shard.
This is the interesting part, because we were talking about this, and we talked about Egypt as a kid. We, you know, when we were, our parents were at the embassy there, we used to always go like out into the desert looking for, there were like ruins all the, in those days you could just pick up anything. And one thing we always picked up were potsherds, which are like ancient pottery that, you know, broke up and that people were, you know, they used a long time ago. So I kept collecting potsherds, and that's when sherd is generally used in archaeology. Shard is more of an archaeological term, meaning basically a fragment of a pot. Shard is more usually more general.
Yeah, something
in that sense.
Anything could have broken and left a pointy bit or something. Yeah,
but you could use shard for the things we picked up too.
Right, you could, and that's interesting because I didn't really realize the distinction in my head. But I do think, if for example, glass was broken, I'd say pick up the shards. I don't think I'd say pick up the sherds. I think
would you with glass?
I think I would. I think I sort of knew without knowing is what I was thinking more about it. I can't put it like now, because now we know the difference. I can't say it.
Well, the problem I'm having is now they both sound like alike and my head's going, because I think I would say pick up the pieces of glass. Right?
Oh, no, but I'm saying, I agree with that too. But if I said, Kathy, there are a bunch of glass shards, would I say sherds or shards? I don't know.
Say shards. I don't think he would say glass sherds. You say pot sherds, but I can't hear glass sherds.
I can't either. I think I would have said shards of glass or glass shards. But I think you're right. I would say pick up the pieces of glass. I think it's the same thing.
So I had a vague idea of the difference in definitions, or that sherds were, you know, specifically pieces of pots and shards maybe were more general. What's really weird to me is that you're saying the word sherd. Like, it really seems to me that it ought to be pronounced shard, even though it's spelled sherd.
Oh, that's interesting.
Sherd just sounds like a really weird word. What it feels like is like the British Derby, D-E-R-B-Y, which is
Darby,
right?
Pronounced Darby.
So it feels like sherd ought to be pronounced shard, even though it's spelled sherd. I mean,
it's interesting because to you guys it does. But again, I'm thinking back on being a kid in Egypt, picking up pot sherds. And sherd to me is the default. It's actually really interesting.
Well, they're saying here, etymologically, it was also pot scarth from the Middle English scarth. Meaning a pottery fragment.
No, the SC though is pronounced sh in Old English.
Right, though. I'm spelling it so you can see what you see. You
I see, yeah.
Which came from the Old Norse skado, which came from the Old English, but that then it is more of an a than an er. It's E-A-S-C-E-A-R-D, which would be scared, wouldn't it be scarred?
Yeah.
Shard.
So did the two words, I mean, they came from the same place, right?
Yeah.
When did sherd become a thing that people were talking about? Do you have any idea?
Well, we have basically potsherd comes from the mid-14th century.
Mm-hmm.
But the Middle English, though, looks more like shored.
That's what I was saying. It's more like that.
Kathy's right. But then we have Old English sheared. So.
Well, interestingly, though, you more often when you look, I was just like typing this in and I find shard all over. But it's usually shirred. It's not just shirred. It's potsherd.
Potsherd.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, when we were kids in Egypt, they said shirds. They said potsherds, but also shirred. That I distinctly remember. Yeah.
Well, so is it the case that all sherds are shards, but not all shards are sherds?
That seems to be about it.
That seems it to me.
Okay, okay.
And if anyone wants a potsherd from ancient Egypt, just give us a call.
Yes, yes, please send me one.
Okay, this leads us to sherd versus shard. What's the difference? I'm doing like my game show music. These are words that sound similar, but don't mean exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I should add here, we also threw in plenipotentiary.
Oh, from last week.
Ambassador.
Yeah. And ambassador, which don't sound similar, but unless you have really weird hearing, but they... They're technically a little bit different.
Yeah, I'll
start with this one.
I'll remind everyone that I misspelled plenipotentiary last week. I had no idea what it meant. So I don't know how I will possibly distinguish between plenipotentiary and ambassadorial. But hey, I'm willing to give it a shot.
Okay, go.
Well, plenipotentiary is just something that is within the context of an embassy. And something that's ambassadorial has more to do with the head of that embassy.
That's very good.
Is it really? I made that up.
You're actually good. Can you think of like plenipotentiary, what it comes from in Latin? Can you just think of any idea with it or not?
No, given that I completely biffed the spelling of it last week, I have no idea. By the way, plenipotentiary was plenipotentiary.
Yes. Okay, with the P-O to make you remember it, potens, potent. Think of the word potent. That means power. Potens is powerful in Latin. Plenus is full. So it's full of power. So a plenipotentiary is a diplomatic agent, and it can be an ambassador. He has full authority to act on behalf of the government, can sign treaties or make binding decisions. So basically, plenipotentiary, you can be an ambassador, but you can also be I remember this diplomatic title when I was a young guy. Ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary.
Ambassador extraordinary?
Yes. Extraordinary.
wait a minute.
But I always thought it would be funny because it sounds sort of like you're an extraordinary, amazing ambassador.
This is starting to sound like a Gilbert and Sullivan opera.
It does. So plenipotentiary, it can be a noun, like you're a plenipotentiary or diplomatic agent with full powers.
Huh.
And you can be an ambassador plenipotentiary, which means you're an ambassador with full powers.
Wow. Okay.
So there we go. So next time, Fletcher, you're at a diplomatic reception, you can wax very...
That's right.
Exactly. Excuse me, are you an ambassador extraordinary?
I know. I like
it. Okay. Now, moving along to two words that are very similar, but mean very different. Venal and venial.
Oof. I'm not sure which is which, and one of them I don't know at all the definition of then. This is really hard for me. Venal, is venal like just kind of base, like instinct, based in instinct or something?
Well, you're kind of close. It's basically someone is capable of being obtained for a price, corruptible, or it can be offered for sale from an older meaning.
I mean, so the we talk about, is it venal sins? It's not venial sins.
It is
venial sins.
Yes.
Shoot. Okay. Venal then, like if I'm, you could buy me off, right?
Right.
Okay. And venial. Well, I don't know then. What does venial mean? I guess I know what
venial.
I guess venial sins are not the mortal sins, right?
Right.
Very good.
They're the minor ones. We can pardon that one.
Right.
It's just a venial sin. Just go there and say 89 Hail Marys and you're fine. Yeah.
Right, but what does it actually mean, like, not so bad? What does it mean? Venial.
Well, it comes from the Latin venia. The V would be pronounced w in which is forgiveness, indulgence, pardon, or favor.
Okay, forgivable.
Yes.
Hmm.
Okay, that was a practical question or a practicable question? What's the difference between the two? Hmm. Practical and practicable. Mm-hmm. Practicable.
Mm-hmm. This is good. This is actually really good to do today because I will learn a lot. Because a lot of these words you sort of know and you get from the context of whatever you're reading, but they're really easy just to skip past and not to go look up. So I actually, I really appreciate this, guys. Practical is something that that's commonsensical, I guess, that is you can use in practical life. I don't know. We know what practical means, right? I'm having trouble finding other words to say practical. Practicable, is that like something that can be practiced or?
You're getting there.
That's really pretty much it, though, yeah. I would say.
I mean, you can practical, you can put it into use or something.
I think it's like feasible.
Feasible, yeah. Practicable. That's yeah.
Yeah.
It's something that, yeah, you can do. You can perform it. You can capable of being used is what it began being used in the 1700s. So, yeah.
You got it, Fletcher. I think you're right.
More or less, except that I had trouble finding other words to define practical, but I think we generally know what practical means, right? Okay, the next set of words, I'll go ahead and read them since you sent them to me. Stanch and staunch.
This was really interesting, this word. I just saw it used a couple days ago in the news.
Mm.
Trump is trying to stanch the... And then they went on, but I'm not gonna. I just thought that'll give it away.
Sure.
But
well, you can stanch the bleeding or something, right? It's to stop it from happening, stop the flow.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
And
good.
People often use staunch there, so much so that I'm starting to wonder if you could, like, if it's actually okay to say staunch.
Exactly. This is one where I always say that I'm not persnickety, and this one I'm persnickety about.
I'm just like with Kathy on this. I hate staunch the flow. Yeah. You're bleeding, you stanch the flow. You do not staunch the flow. I agree.
But staunch is much more common now. And the interesting thing is we plugged it into the Ngram viewer, and in books... staunch the flow is more common now than stanch the flow. In the 1980s, they started splitting.
Mm.
Stanch went down, staunch went up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're going to lose stanch, frankly.
I think you're right. It feels a lot like champing at the bit and chomping at the
bit. I was going to say the same thing, precisely. Yeah. I think it's very similar.
And both of which are pet peeves of mine.
It's true.
It's champ at the bit. Stanch the flow is
so staunch is an adjective though, right? Like a staunch conservative or something. Somebody who is, I don't want to say rigid, but
firm.
Good.
Standing firm.
That's exactly the word.
Interestingly, it initially came from being watertight, impervious to water. So initially it was like, you know, that's staunch. That boat is a staunch boat.
Yeah.
And yes, it became more figurative.
But they both come from the same Latin word to stand, stare, to stand.
Mm-hmm.
So they both have the similar origin way in the past. And both have an effect, like Kathy just said, water type, which you're saying firms, you know, you're not going to be bleeding in that sense. So you could make an argument where staunch in a way would work. Mm-hmm. I still don't like
it. But stanch means stop the flow.
I completely agree.
Staunch does not.
I completely agree. But I think...
I think it's okay to still be a little bit annoyed by that as long as you acknowledge that you're losing that battle.
Yes. And as long as I acknowledge it's really a minor battle.
Yeah, it will be.
Yes, very much so.
But it's funny though, because the other day someone said chomping at the bit and I can't help it. I just like, grits. I didn't say anything, but I almost said like, it's champing, but I didn't.
I beg your pardon.
Okay, this is an interesting one. And this is sort of interesting because how language can, if you're learning the language, it could be really a problem. Childlike and childish. I bet you know the difference instinctively. But to a learner of English, this could be rough.
Yeah. Let's see if I can verbalize this. Childlike is, well, like a child. So maybe potentially wide-eyed and curious about the world.
Mm-hmm.
Childish is more like immature.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah.
And that one really gets me, though, because if you're learning, I mean, because basically like and the ish are both making it, you know, adjectives, mm-hmm. and they're both technically sort of the same.
Mm-hmm.
But we instinctively know that childlike is like wide-eyed and innocent and good. And childish is, oh, shut up. Stop screaming. You know?
It's interesting, though, that the whole concept of the puerile child that you want to, like, put in the closet or something started in the 15th century.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so we've always hated children, is what you're saying.
Whereas childlike, so you had childish was the adjective first.
Oh, okay.
First came childish, then came childlike.
Childlike. Yeah, well, I mean, if you've got childish and it means something bad, you're going to need a different word for something something that's good about children. Once people realize that, you know, children are actually pretty cool, they needed a word for that, right? You know what, though? You probably wouldn't call a child childlike, but you would call a child childish.
No, you're right.
You're being childish. Yeah, well, I'm 6 years old.
Yeah. You're right, Fletcher.
Stuff it, Dad.
The next one is really annoying. Kathy and I got really very angry at all of these etymologists when we had this question. Continual, and you were going to see why in a minute. Continual and continuous.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. I think I know the difference, but I don't know which one's which.
Okay.
One of them is like it just keeps going.
Correct.
And the other one is like it's set in a row back to back to back to back.
Kind
of. Is that right?
Continuous is uninterrupted. It's nonstop. There's no breaks. Continuous, it's like on and on and on and on.
Uh-huh.
Continual means frequently repeated.
Oh.
Or like you said, regular intervals of this.
But there
are breaks in it.
Okay. I'm not sure I was really on the right track with that then. So let's say continuous would be a 24-hour television channel that just showed one thing. Let's say it showed Andy Warhol's Empire State Building film on... like spliced together on repeat forever. Like, so there's no actual repeat. It just never begins or ends. Continual. What's something more like what that would be? Let's put it in TV terms. Give me a TV example of something that's continual.
There's continually reruns of Friends on TV.
Yeah.
Okay. So like it happens. It happens over and over, just not necessarily on end forever.
Yes.
But
okay, yes, of course.
This is the annoying thing. This Kath, go with our butt, because that was really annoying.
Okay. But when you look these words up, the definition of continual, which we just said was frequently repeated, i.e. reruns of Friends, is listed as proceeding without interruption or cessation is the first one.
Hmm.
Then it's often repeated and very frequent.
So we're getting, this is just, and then the opposite occurred with continuous. So I think we're getting into the old bi-weekly that we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one? Does bi-weekly mean like once every 2 weeks or twice a week? We have no, basically just pick what you think in context and go with it. That's our idea here.
Do you guys ever use continual? I think I use continuous the right way, where it's like it's nonstop, like the Andy Warhol film.
I do too.
But then, wait a second. I think I do use it's continually annoying. It's not like annoying me 24 hours a day, but it always annoys me.
Yeah.
That is slightly different. There is a nuance that I do use correctly. Never mind. So I'm proud of myself.
Good job.
Very good. This is another annoying one. Kath and I got into this debate because this is a grammar book had this. We both thought it's obvious. Each versus both.
Or did you each think it was obvious?
That's our point. Very good, Fletcher.
I mean, so it seems like there's slightly a distinction you could make in that if you each thought it was obvious, you came to that conclusion separately. If you both thought it was obvious, that means you might have come to that conclusion together, maybe.
That's good. Now I'm going to read to you what the grammar book said.
That's crazy.
And this bothered both of us. We both went crazy about this. So just, I want you to hear it, and let's see if you agree with us or not. Here's the grammar book I'm directly quoting. Both and each should not be used interchangeably. Both means two together. Each means any number taken one at a time. That's true. Mm-hmm. The use of both for each results in ambiguity. Now, here we go. When a sports writer writes, quote, he got two singles, both of them driving in two runs. We're not sure what is meant. How many runs did he bring in? Two or four? Okay, I'm going to repeat the sentence again. The sports writer writes, he got two singles, both of them driving in two runs. We're not sure what he meant. How many runs did he bring in? Two or four? Kath and I both had, didn't see any ambiguity here. We're asking if you do.
We're still pretty sure what he meant. I don't think anybody's going to read that and think he only drove in two runs for the game.
Yeah.
That's
thank
what we
you.
That's what we thought. Yeah.
I do see, I mean, like if you really sat down and looked at that, I do see that there could be confusion, but I just don't think in a real life sense there would be.
No. Yeah, that's
agreed.
Exactly what we said. We were going to say, we were like, come on here.
No, you we know? Kept trying to like hear it the two run way. We couldn't even hear it that way. We both thought, yeah, you got four runs completely.
It's like both of them drove in two runs.
Yeah,
number one, two runs. Number two, two runs. They're both.
Here's something, though. I mean, I think maybe it's just context that can really help you. Like if the admission price to something is $2 and you walk up and you say, oh, my sister and I are here. How much? I could say, oh, $2, $2 for both of you.
That's good, Fletcher.
That's different
you got
from
it.
$2 for each of you.
That's
okay.
$2
perfect. For both of you is ambiguous because
yes.
That to me means if you said $2 for both of you, I pay $2
exactly.
And it's a dollar each.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you that. Because $2 for both of you doesn't mean you pay $2, you pay $2. Not at all.
Yes. Right. That's good, Fletcher.
Right.
You've solved the problem.
It's much better than the singles.
But I mean, by and large, you can get away with using both for each or each for both or whatever.
Because I don't think you would say, yeah, because I think actually if it would cause a trouble contextually, like the case you just brought up, I don't think anyone would say $2 for the both of you.
Oh, sure
$2
they would.
For each of you.
No, I totally disagree. I think people would easily say that
would?
Just without thinking. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. I don't think so, but I'll agree because I'm nice. The next one, this was a Ross pick. It goes back to last week's spelling quiz. The couplet is hieroglyphics versus hieroglyph.
Okay.
This is a nitpicky.
It's useful only if you're dealing with Egyptologists, actually. But
I'll remind everyone that I did spell this correctly.
Yes.
I always thought, and maybe I'm totally wrong, but I always thought hieroglyphics was like the whole system and hieroglyph was like an individual one.
Very good. You got it. And the annoying part about this one, though, is hieroglyphic can also be an adjective describing the type of writing.
Mm-hmm. Hieroglyphic writing?
Yes.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
Exactly.
It means written with hieroglyphs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, so, yeah, if you're talking about more than one hieroglyph, you would say hieroglyphs. But if you're talking about
yes.
The whole system, then you say hieroglyphics.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
No, but some people say hieroglyphic. There are some people who get really snickety about the whole thing, and they say you should say hieroglyphic should only be an adjective, which I don't think is good. I think it doesn't have to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, then you also have the people that say hieroglyph is any form of picture writing. It's not just ancient Egyptians. It's Mayans or Aztecs, etc. And then you have other people say, no, and it just gets all...
Yeah.
It's a hot world out there in pictorial language.
So are you unsatisfied with our
with your explanation?
So far,
yeah.
or are you dissatisfied? And can you explain to us the difference between the two? This is another pet peeve of mine, incidentally.
Oh, really?
We have three now. Champing at the bit. And this one definitely is bothersome to me.
Okay.
Kath, how do you feel about this one?
I don't mind it the way you do, because we had this about disinterested and uninterested, remember? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did.
Mm-hmm. You guys were pickier than I about it. This one,
yeah.
I understand the difference, but I...
Well, the way it feels to me, and as with a lot of these, I don't actually know the dictionary definition difference, but the way it feels to me is if I'm unsatisfied, I simply am not satisfied. But dissatisfied means I'm feeling actively annoyed or bothered by not being satisfied.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's kind of, yeah, because I mean, technically, it's usually the former unsatisfied is, as you said, not satisfied. And dissatisfied is you're expressing, you're showing your lack of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kathy, I don't think it's a big deal, though. It just still gets to me.
It doesn't bother me.
If I'm dissatisfied, that just feels more active. Like, unsatisfied mm-hmm. means I just haven't reached the level of being satisfied. That doesn't mean yes. I'm displeased.
Exactly.
Well, because also, yeah, right, that's actually good, because unsatisfied means it's something isn't satisfied. I mean, my needs were not satisfied. My needs were unsatisfied, yeah. which made me dissatisfied. Right. Actually, yes. You're right. There's
the active sense. Yeah.
Huh. That's a good one.
Next, we've done this before, but we had to do it again because it's a pet peeve. This is a pet peeve of mine, and it's becoming more and more
mine
common.
Too.
Enormity versus enormous.
Oh, okay. Well, something that's enormous is really big. The enormity seems more like, let me see if I can put this into words.
How about this? Enormous is big.
Yeah.
Enormity is big bad.
Big and bad.
Yeah, perfect
okay.
for us. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you talk about the enormity of the situation. That's interesting because I am not sure that I necessarily feel, I'm not sure that I necessarily feel that it's bad when you talk about the enormity of the situation. More like it's grave or very serious. But not necessarily bad.
Well, it's
you wouldn't talk about it when it's good either, but like it's a very serious situation.
And normally, though, usually has more of a, it does have more of a negative context. Maybe we should say instead of bad, a negative context. The enormity of the situation would be overwhelming scale of something grave or very important or serious in a yeah. bad.
It used to be technically extreme wickedness. I mean, it was pretty yeah. unequivocal.
Yeah,
it was like
wow.
the enormity of the crimes. I mean, it's like, the heinous.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and
it is.
More commonly now, it's taken on a lot of the aspect of enormous. So it's something like huge and important.
Yeah, like the enormity of the climate challenge they have mm-hmm. right here. The enormity of global warming. But those are not good.
No, those are not
good things.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe you wouldn't talk about how extremely serious something is unless there could be a very bad outcome. I just mean that I don't get the idea that enormity means bad. It just means extremely serious.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Although Kathy is right, though. It did start from...
Yeah. Yeah, which, yeah, obviously I didn't know, and that makes a...
Well, actually, though, earlier it meant just big.
Yeah.
And then it got a bad... Actually, to be really fair, like, yeah, it meant big, and then it got to be bad.
And then in the 1800s, it went back to just being big, but it still had a bit of the bad, and now it's gone back to the big, pretty much.
Although I still use it as the enormity of his crimes, I would say, and the enormousness of the ocean, I would say.
But I don't think I don't like enormousness. It sounds like rhinoceros without like a horn. You know
okay,
I mean?
The bigness of the ocean, which is enormous.
Vastness.
So let's do it that
vastness.
Way.
The ocean is vast is what it is, Rob.
I like vastness.
The vastness. Yes. Yes.
But I must say, in fairness now, if I hear someone say the enormity of the ocean, I don't think it would really bother me.
That wouldn't bother me.
I don't know. I still hear it as bad.
Well, the ocean can be very bad.
It can.
But I like the ocean because
so scary.
It's big, too.
It's so scary. There are so many weird things under there.
Yeah, but if I heard enormity, I would think that. I wouldn't think like, it's... I mean, like if you're looking at the ocean going, how beautiful, how large, enormity wouldn't work for me.
Huh. Interesting. I think context would determine whether it bothered me or not.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe if you talked about the enormity of the elephant, that would bother me. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know.
The next one is, this actually is going to lead us to something we're going to talk about next week. Next week, we're going to talk about grammar controversies.
Oh, good.
So this one sort of is like an introduction to that, if you will. It's further and farther.
Mm.
We have talked about this in the past.
Mm-hmm. This is good because I think people wonder about this a lot and probably never get a good answer. I think realistically, as someone who does try to distinguish between the two, I think realistically it doesn't matter and people shouldn't worry about it.
You got it. It seems that the distinction seems to have been invented around 1900.
Really?
By grammarians.
Oh, even...
That
oh,
is grammarians.
Man.
Who is pesking around. I know.
Yeah, and we don't think it's worth fighting about.
Let me talk just briefly about what the distinction is, I think.
Good.
As far
Let's
as I
hear
know.
It. Let's hear it.
Farther, with the A, farther deals with actual physical distance. Like, this this is farther away from that. Further is basically anything else.
We're further away from that definition.
Yeah.
The farther we go away from Kansas. Yes, you're right.
Mm.
That's it.
I love the fact that further came first,
Did
too.
It? Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's a really big deal.
I agree. And I actually do make the distinction when I write. Knowing that it was invented, you know, not even 200 years ago, it makes it less likely that I will distinguish that when I write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a rule I make, it has to be 300 years
yeah,
old
exactly,
for me to follow
exactly.
the rules, right?
I love the fact that it's true, though, when you think about it. Okay, Merriam-Webster, I thought this was really good advice to let your ear guide you.
Yeah.
Because, okay, they say that the words are interchangeable with regard to distance usually, but further is preferred when you're trying to say moreover. And an adjective, like it's a verb, you don't say to farther one's career.
That's true.
No, you don't.
You know? So there are moments when they're distinctly one is preferred to the other, and you'll hear it. But on the whole, when it's like, when you've got those people cracking down going, ha, you know, you can't say, I traveled further yesterday than I did today. Guess you can.
But I think it's really funny that when you're saying it, I really use the I didn't even realize it until two minutes ago.
You do use the distinction.
I do.
Yeah, when you just said I traveled further away, I would have thought, no, it's farther. I mean, I would think in my head. I wouldn't have told you that, but Kathy's wrong
I
here.
Do.
Oh, it's farther away.
Yeah, like I've said before, I mean, I notice it. I notice it in news stories all the time, and I think to myself, oh no, that should be the other way, but like, man, is that really any way to live your life?
No, it isn't.
I don't love that about myself, you know?
I think, Fletcher, I'm in the same boat as you. I hate myself right now because I'm doing the same thing. I didn't even realize I do it.
But the interesting thing is, okay, technically, anytime you use farther, you could legally use further.
Yeah.
Because one of the definitions of further is farther.
It's farther.
Mm-hmm. So that's a definition of further, farther. But you can use further for literal distance, but you can't use farther
for metaphorically. Yeah.
If you look at the definitions, because farther doesn't have further.
No, I feel like screaming.
That's its definition.
I think we should go. I think we shall go no further or farther with this discussion.
So all farthers are furthers, but not all furthers are farthers.
Furthers are farthers. I think.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.